The late Australian painter Geoffrey Smart was clear the urban landscapes he put on canvas were not real landscapes with narratives attached. They were created, and it was the forms that mattered. Here he is, speaking to the ABC in 2001.
According to me, a picture has to have structure. It has to be structured, it has to be designed. And that's the way I look at things. I don't like pictures much that are little windows on the world or little gaps where you see space and pretty scenes and things like that. I prefer a structured, made picture to a glimpse.
So how did Geoffrey Smart reach that carefully ordered composition he was after? He was a skilled draftsman, and his drawings formed important studies for his paintings of lonely figures in industrial settings. The Art Gallery of New South Wales, which has the largest public collection of Smart's work, has been gifted 27 drawings for its collection, and it's put 13 of them on display alongside some of the well-known works in the exhibition, Geoffrey Smart, Constructed World. Hannah Hutchison is the curator of the exhibition. Hannah, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you, Ed. It's my pleasure.
So, Hannah, do you see Geoffrey Smart's works the way he did? That they were always, to paraphrase his words, about the geometry?
I think that the geometry is a really important aspect of Geoffrey Smart's works. I feel that every Geoffrey Smart work is a construction. And what I mean by that is that in Geoffrey Smart's vision, he didn't just depict the urban world as he saw it in front of him. He changed it. He reconstructed things. He moved buildings around, and all through a great feeling of geometry.
So with Geoffrey Smart, what kind of shapes or sites was he particularly inspired by?
He was really inspired by the built landscape, urban environment, and I think this really comes back to some early influences.
Where did he grow up, Hannah?
So he grew up in Adelaide. From quite an early age, he had this fascination with urban geometry, and with a view from his apartment out across the rooftops and basically all the urban conglomeration of high density in a working class Adelaide, rather than the view from the other side of his apartment, which was across Adelaide's parklands.
Yeah, how fascinating then that he chose to literally look one way rather than the other.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
It is really interesting. And I think there's another subconscious influence about living in Adelaide in his early years that comes through in his works. So as many of your listeners will know, Adelaide is a city that's laid out in a grid-like formation. And like Smart, I also grew up in Adelaide. I really only became aware of this gridded structure of Adelaide after I left and had moved to Sydney. And living in Sydney for the first little while, I was constantly confused about which direction I was facing in, and I was always
getting
lost.
So very ungridded, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Apart from the very centre.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So this may have been somewhat of a subconscious influence in his interest in geometry.
Yeah. Now, I was wondering, Hannah, about the jungle gym.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us about that particular work and what the catalyst was for that work?
Yeah, so Smart, essentially his works are very much designed, as he said in that intro, rather than a direct representation of a thing seen. So he does this in all of his works, but in the particular work that you're talking about, which is titled Playground at Mondragone, this work is a depiction of something that Smart actually couldn't see. So what I mean when I say that is in 97, Smart decided he would like to paint a picture of a children's jungle gym structure. He drove around the playgrounds near where he lived, but unfortunately he couldn't find one to draw because around this time I think that they had been decided to be somewhat unsafe and had been removed from the playgrounds. Mm. So with the help of his archivist back in Australia, he decided to look at the commissioning a computer-generated image that he could work from. And through going through this process, Smart soon realised that he could be in control of many things, like the lighting and environmental effects. And he became quite meticulous in what he wanted. So he asked the technician to create a drawing of a jungle gym that was set on the 13th of October, 97.
Oh, seriously.
At 4:30 p.m. at 43 degrees latitude and with the viewer standing about 3 meters away from the structure. So incredibly meticulous. And when he received these drawings, he then went about working up the painting through a series of studies, as he normally would. But I think this work is a really incredible example of how he created a scene of something that is entirely constructed, entirely fabricated, but also how he was willing to utilise technology in order to achieve his perfect composition and his vision.
Yes, yeah, so in many ways, actually the opposite to what we might expect from this exhibition.
Absolutely.
Where we're looking a lot of the time at the drawings that he's created. So that's a fascinating opposition. Thank you for that, Hannah. So when we do look at actual Jeffrey Smart's drawings rather than computer-generated ones, what do we learn from his own drawings alongside the paintings that they were studies for?
So it's interesting to see in some instances we will have multiple studies for a work. Sometimes we only have one study for a work, but it's just really interesting to see how his pristinely painted works come about through a really long process. Yeah. So it takes him time to work things out, to lay things out on the composition, and to just get everything just so before he moves on to his final canvas.
Yes. So he had clearly his own very strong style, but he also had an extraordinary way of drawing our eye to parts of his composition that we wouldn't necessarily have gone to. Can you explain the way that he did that?
Absolutely. So he's put a lot of thought into mapping out his composition. And I think colour plays a huge role in this. But if you look at many Jeffrey Smart paintings, even if you just bring up a whole lot of images of his work, you often see that something draws your eye into the left side of the canvas, and then another compositional element will often draw your eye across to the right. So he really consciously designed his paintings to be read left to right, as we would a book.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a figure, sometimes it's a line, sometimes it's a block of bold colour that really causes our eye to do this.
Hannah, I was looking at some of his work online, and one picture particularly drew my eye, a portrait in the art museum, which seems to star a fire extinguisher, even though it's set in an art museum and there is actually like a painting of another painting within it. But the way that your eye is drawn in that picture, it seems to be particularly unusual and very powerful.
It is, yes.
Yeah. Hannah, let's talk about the sort of, I suppose, the subjective feelings that many of us have about Jeffrey Smart's paintings, that many people describe the figures in his paintings as lonely, these often single people swallowed up by the urban environment. But Jeffrey Smart apparently insisted that his works weren't about emotion or any kind of narrative. What do you think about that?
That's a great question. So the figures in Smart's paintings have long been a source of debate and discussion between critics, curators, art historians, and the general public over many years. Smart always maintained that he placed figures in his works to act as a measure of scale or to anchor a composition.
Oh.
Personally, I quite like that we don't really know. I like that each person can view one of his works and can take away a different meaning to someone else. And while I see that compositionally, the figures do indeed provide a sense of scale. In fact, there's a great example in the exhibition, a work titled Portrait of Clive James. And in this work, Smart has painted Clive James about the size of a postage stamp in rather a large composition. And in doing this, he's showing us the scale. So James is surrounded by these quite large skyscrapers.
Oh, yes. Now, is this also the one where there's a version of Clive James with a lot of yellow, what looked like shipping containers around
him? So it's that's an earlier version of this work. This work was one that went through about 7 different studies.
Yeah.
Quite often when Smart wasn't pleased with how a composition was coming together, if he didn't think it was working, he would scrap it and change it. So in this work, Clive James goes from earlier studies of being placed in what looks like maybe a car park into a Japanese scene that Smart had viewed actually while he was on a train in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And it features quite a large yellow corrugated iron fence and skyscrapers.
Yeah, and such a very particular yellow as well, that yellow.
It is, yes.
Hannah, when you go back to Adelaide these days, whenever you go back, do you ever kind of have a glimpse of the landscape there and think, ah, that was a Jeffrey Smart? That was
Gosh. Do you know, his urban landscapes and pictures are so universal that I think all of us see Jeffrey Smart's really wherever we go. Yeah. But I think the grid layout of Adelaide is something that now I always think of, and it reminds me of Jeffrey Smart.
Wonderful. Hannah, thank you so much for coming on to The Art Show.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Hannah Hutchison, Assistant Curator of Australian Art at the Art Gallery of New South Wales and curator of the exhibition Jeffrey Smart Constructed World, which opens this Saturday, the 11th of May, and is showing until the end of September.